You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Americans say Italian cuisine is their favorite food. Well, how did that happen? Although we might also ask a very different question. What exactly is Italian cuisine, and how has it changed in this country over the many years since Italians first began emigrating here? Joining me now are two people who should know the answers to all of those questions and pretty much anything else that we might want to know about the food of Italy. Restaurateur Tony May has spent four decades striving to elevate the image of Italian cuisine in this country. He has owned and operated Palio, then San Domenico, and most recently ST26 on East 26th Street and Madison Square Park North. He is here joined by a return visit to our show by Lou DiPaolo, who owns the DiPaolo Fine Food Store at 200 Grand Street in Little Italy. Welcome to our show. Lou, how many generations ago did the DiPaolo family set up shop in Little Italy?
Well, I'm the fourth generation, Leonard, and we've been continually at New York City's Little Italy and very proud of our Italian heritage and proud of the many contributions Italians have made to the United States, especially the contribution in food.
Where did your great-grandfather come from in Italy?
He came from a region little known. It's the region of Basilicata. It's in southern Italy, sandwiched between Campania and Puglia, and sits just above Calabria. Mountainous area, very, very poor area around the turn of the last century. And there was a tremendous exodus of Italian immigrants that came and settled in the United States, specifically New York City's Little Italy.
As maybe the reason that for many years Italian-American food was largely Southern Italian food based, wasn't it? Sicily and Southern Italy.
Yes, but there also was a large influx of immigrants from Northern Italy and around the area of Genova, and on the eastern side from Friuli, Venezia, Giulia. Both areas had suffered some hardships, and there were some immigrants that came from that area.
So he came here, and then he brought his family over later?
My great-grandfather, yes. He settled in 1903 in Little Italy, opened the shop in 1910. March was 100 years that our family has been in business.
In the store that I shopped in for many years on Mott and Grand Street?
Is a continuation of my grandparents' store. As each one of my great-grandfather's children grew and got married, he established them in their own business. And it wasn't uncommon to have families that have multiple businesses within the community. You see it today even with the Asian community which surrounds Little Italy. So my great-grandfather had a shop on Mott Street, and my grandparents in 1925 opened up their shop on the corner of Mott and Grand. That's the shop we continue today.
Well, you just went across the street to a larger location a couple of years back. What sorts of things did DiPaolo's offer when it first opened?
It was a simple latteria. A latteria is a dairy, Leonard, and it's a place where people would come in and buy fresh milk. And my great-grandfather, being a farmer, he was also a cheesemaker, made fresh dairy in the shop, literally made his fresh mozzarella and ricotta and caciotta and basic fresh cheeses. And this is what was sold. Also, my grandparents, they started their shop as a simple latteria and continued that.
Was it mostly local product or were they importing
things? It was all local product at the time in 1925. However, at the time, there was some products coming in from Italy. And around 1930, my family expanded the product line to include some basic hard cheeses that were able to withstand traveling. Remember, there was no refrigeration at the time in the hulls of these ships. So cheeses such as Pecorino Romano, Parmigiano, Provolone, Caciocavallo, these were cheeses that were able to travel, as well as products like olive oil. They started to sell that product as well.
Tony, when did you come here?
Well, I came here in 1963, and even at that time, after so many years where DiPaolo was in business, Italian food still had a long way to go. Mm. You know, actually, you said before that the early Italian-American cuisine was mostly from the southern. I wish it was from the southern, because thanks to the DiPaolo people, people like DiPaolo and his family particularly, if our early immigrants had then the products that we have today. They would have not bastardized, you know, the Italian cuisine.
Although there are some people like Lydia Bastianich who say they have a certain fondness for the Italian-American cuisine they discovered here. It's just not Italian food. It's something else.
Well, you know, I mean, you know, you can say a lot of things, you know, for publicity reasons or for personal, you know, enhancement. But I truly believe that Italian cuisine is the most popular cuisine in America, but it is the least known.
Well, you came here in 65, you say?
1963.
63. Your name wasn't Tony May in those days.
No, at that time was Anthony Magliulo, but nobody could pronounce it.
Except for while you were Tony Mai, and now you're Tony May?
Yeah, so I sort of shortened it when I took over the management of the Rainbow Room at the time in 1968. And I shortened to Tony May, M-A-Y, so that I anglicized it, if you will. And that has become my stage name in my business.
Now, so you were at the Rainbow Room, which was not an Italian restaurant. It was a nightclub, and they serve French food.
No, well, you know.
And you were there 20 years?
I was there for 22 years. But, you know, when I first came to America, I did not know anybody. I noticed that Italian cuisine had a long way to go. Italian-American at that time was, a cuisine I did not recognize as Italian because I grew up with a different type of cuisine.
Well, it was veal parmesan and spaghetti and meatballs.
Yeah, but, you know, sometimes they even spoke a language I did not understand. And I promised myself that if one day I had the opportunity, I would try and do something about it. I was lucky enough to be at the right place at the right time. So when I started working at the Rainbow Room in 1964, I started there as a captain, and a couple of years later I was the maitre d'. 4 years later, I managed it, and 10 years later, we bought the lease. Mm-hmm. And I was there until 1986 when Joe Baum took over from me.
And you opened up Palio at that time.
Palio,
the name comes from Siena. You're not from Siena, are
you? No. Palio, the name is Senese, but the chef was from Merano. A very well-known chef used to run a relais chateau in Merano. His name was Andrea Elrigo. That I changed his name, so to speak. I called him Andrea di Merano because I wanted, you know, Elrigo sound very Austrian. But in that part of the world, you know, the dialect of, you know, people that live on the border is almost Austrian.
Would you have changed your name if you'd come here now?
Probably not, you know, but remember
that. Because we say Mastroianni in this country. We say all sorts of names that we might have had difficulty with in the past.
Well, you know, I had some interesting experiences in my early years in America. I also experienced some discrimination. I experienced some very good things. And I have to say that this country has been incredibly good to me. So I have nothing to say against America or Americans. But the country was still growing into a better understanding of the immigrant people that came to to America. I came to America in 1963 because Italy had nothing to offer to the young people at the time. So it was a very good thing for me, you know, and we're thinking of my hometown, which is Torre del Greco, is right next to Naples. You do three things in my hometown, either work coral or cameos, or you go at sea, or you leave. So I chose the third option.
My guests are Tony May, who is currently owner of SD26 at 19 East 26th Street in Madison Square Park North, and Lou DiPaolo, who is co-owner of DiPaolo's at 200 Grand Street and Mott Street in New York. And Lou, did you know that Italian food was not authentic, or whatever word we want to use, when you were growing up here?
Well, what I, you know, traveling to Italy so often, I knew that the food that we were offering to the American public was an adaptation. An adaptation because we could not get most of the ingredients. And what Italian food is basically is the simplicity of ingredients. And if you didn't get the authentic ingredients, you had to adapt to the products. And there's stories for how we've gotten spaghetti and meatballs, which really doesn't exist, like you mentioned before, in Italy. But certainly the polpetta exists. The meatball itself exists. And the combination, too, was so often given because it was a way to stretch your dollar. The pasta was very inexpensive. The meat was a little more expensive. Putting them together was a satisfying meal. And you gave a little smaller polpetta or meatball and a larger portion of pasta.
But what happened when you went to Italy and discovered that the food here wasn't the same? Did you and your family try to duplicate the food of Italy, or did you just go along with what everybody else was eating?
We tried to present to the American people the authentic foods of Italy. We took on a different role. Our shop, being an Italian immigrant shop at the turn of the last century, turning into an Italian-American shop during the turn of after World War II through the 50s and the 60s, and then realizing that we had a greater role to represent foods of Italy. Little Italy, as you know, was dying over the period of years because of the lesser Italian immigrants coming to this country and the larger Asian population.
And Italians were moving out.
Well, they were moving out because Little Italy was never meant to be a place to spend your whole life. It was a stepping stone. It was the footprint of the Italian immigrant. They came, they were able to settle to a place where people spoke their language, had the same basic type of cuisine. They felt comfortable. But then when they became a little more affluent, then they moved. They moved into mainstream America. And every immigrant group does that. It's, it's not just for Italians. So with that said, our role now to stand fast in Little Italy to represent the Italian immigrants, but also to be a true representation of what really is Italian cuisine and food.
But I wonder what really is Italian cuisine. Is there such a thing as a pure, authentic Italian cuisine? Because we're talking about a country where the food is changing as well, but also where every region seems to have its own take on the national cuisine.
Yeah, that is correct. And unfortunately, they confuse the hell out of everybody. And, Italian cuisine is a cuisine of product. You know, what Lou Di Paolo brings in is authentic Italian product. If you understand the product, then you can do great Italian cuisine, because it's not an ignorance about the cuisine itself. It's an ignorance about the product. If they would get to know that riso acquarello can be used and makes your risotto a lot better because it's been slightly aged and it is
what is that
done in a particular way, and therefore, when you make the risotto, the kernel remain more integral, more whole. You can see the actual kernels when you have the risotto. It's not just a blob of things that stays on your stomach. So I think that if we can simply teach more people about Italian product, I did education in 20 schools a couple of years ago, and we brought actual Italian products to the schools. And these students' instructors had never seen this product, and they were wondering where they could get it. And we tried to tell them that while Italian producers not necessarily give you money, but if you ask them, they give you a good price on the product, and maybe they even give the product away. So I think that's our effort. We need to educate the consumer to a better understanding of Italian products.
And I thought I knew risotto. I have arborio in the house, and I make risotto regularly, but I never heard of acquarello. Well, what is this thing that you brought here, Lou, other than something that got it's stamped organic?
Yeah, aside from being organic, acquarello is just one producer of rice. He happens to be, in my opinion, one of the best producers of rice. He takes it to a little bit different level. But that particular rice is not a arborio. That's a Canaroli. And there's many varieties of rice that comes into play in Italian cuisine. Just briefly, on the 20 regions of Italy, sure, they each have a different cuisine. As Tony mentioned, his chef in Palio came from Alto Adige, Sud Tirol. He was Austrian.
But he did the Neapolitan cuisine.
He did a Neapolitan cuisine.
Absolutely.
Okay, under the direction of Tony, because...
Right. You know, he did not do a Neapolitan cuisine. He did the Neapolitan dishes, because, as you know, my restaurants have never been tied into a region. They have always been simply Italian, where you get the best of all the ingredients that you can find and use them in the kitchen. It's difficult to have a regional restaurant unless you have the ingredients.
I have to go to a little break, but I'd love to continue this conversation. So we'll pick it up in a few minutes. My guests are Tony May, who is the owner of SD26 at 19 East 26th Street, Madison Square Park North. In 1996, his restaurant San Domenico was one of only 24 restaurants around the world to receive the first Insegna del Ristorante Italiano from the President of the Republic of Italy, an award recognizing the finest Italian restaurants outside of Italy. And Lou DiPaolo is here, co-owner of DiPaolo's, probably the premier source of Italian food in the city and one of the best in the country. They're located at 200 Grand Street and Mott. And we will continue our conversation after this. We're back with our discussion of Italian cuisine, the most popular cuisine in America, but perhaps, as Tony May suggests, also the most misunderstood, with Tony May, whose most recent restaurant, his current restaurant, is SD26 and on Madison Square Park and 26th Street, and Lou DiPaolo, who is co-owner of DiPaolo's at 200 Grand Street and Mott in Little Italy. Lou, you say in the store's history that is online that you and your brother Sal and sister Marie realized when your father retired that in order to move forward, we had to look back. What do you mean by that?
Well, the method of the way my grandparents and great-grandparents did business, it was more or less an extension of their home. And in running our business, we take better care of it than our own home. It's a place where we welcome people in to share our food, not necessarily just, here's your product, give me my money, thank you very much, goodbye.
No, in fact, I forgive me for interrupting, but since I used to live just down the block, for me, both the pleasure and the pain of going to DiPaolo's was that you waited a long time because every customer was treated as a special case. We'd be waiting, and meanwhile, you'd be schmoozing with each customer, to use an Italian word. And then it came my turn, and you'd say, hi, we haven't seen you in 2 weeks, and we wound up schmoozing as well. What do you want? Oh, let me give you a little bit of this cheese to try out. You might find this really interesting. It just came in. Well, and that's part of the old immigrant approach to doing business, but it really works.
It works. You know, sometimes it could be frustrating for, like you said, for some customers might, you know, say, oh, I got it. But
we took a number and waited.
We want you to feel good coming into our house. And we promise you, when you leave, you're going to feel better.
One day I was there, and this woman was waiting with me, and we got into a conversation, and she said, we started talking about where we shopped in the neighborhood, and this was her favorite place, and she said, my son makes movies. Maybe you've heard of him. His name is Martin Scorsese. He made a movie called Taxi Driver. So it was so weird. You wound up meeting people you never would have thought you would have met and having the strangest conversations.
Well, we're very proud of our customers as well as our shop.
Now, well, we do the same thing in the restaurant business. You know, we always, when a customer sits down, we always try to welcome them by giving them maybe a little morsel of a new product or something that we just brought in, or whether it is finocchiona from Tuscany or Ventresca di Tonno from Calabria, or shrimps from Mazara, or calamaretti from the Adriatic. We always try to let them taste something that we know they are not very familiar with, rather than just to give them, you know, the usual kind of morsel, you know, that amuse-bouche, the French call it. And
they're going to order what they recognize rather than something that seems strange to them. And of course, the whole pleasure of eating is discovering new things.
Unfortunately, that is correct. You know, so we encourage the customer to order things that that they are not totally familiar with. Many times what I do on the menu, I describe a dish in words that that the customer may be more familiar with, and then when I deliver the dish, is this what they ordered? But it's not quite exactly what it is. But the interpretation of it is a little bit different than what they have done. For example, you know, if we serve a tripe, you know, as a special dish on a Monday, you know, a sort of a regional dish, we may. Do that with we serve that with Tuscan beans and a touch of tomato, and then we finish it up with extra virgin olive oil. I mean, it is a wonderful dish. But unless I give it to the customer to try, he will never order the next time he comes in.
Well, they won't order tripe because they think tripe doesn't taste good. It tastes rubbery. They don't know that it can be delicious.
Because innards is not something that Americans are accustomed to. They only like to eat the best parts, you know.
Well, what percentage of your customers over the years have been Italians?
Oh, a tremendous amount.
Uh-huh.
You know, we have, I would say that 20% of the customers that come in my restaurant every day, they're native Italians. Because when they come in, you know, invariably, they tell me, Jesus, you know, he says, I feel like I was in Italy today, you know, and it was just, it's just a great experience. Or I've been in New York for a week and I have not had, you know, the opportunity to eat a good dish of pasta or whatever. But we are very proud of that particular aspect.
And Lou, you're in a neighborhood that is changing a lot. I assume that not all your customers are the old Italian customers who came in for many years.
No, it's
I see Chinese people a lot in your shop.
We have customers from all walks, all groups, different generations, from the Italian American descendant, you know, with their heritage, to the Italian immigrant, to the Italian businessman that lives in America. As well as all nationalities. Italian food, you know, I've often said, has become American food because everybody has some sort of Italian-type food in their diet at least once a week, whether it's pizza or a pasta dish or whatever. But I understand Tony, and what he's saying is true. What really is Italian food really needs to start with the true, authentic ingredients that come from Italy. And, you know, over the years, Italy's had a lot of scandals. I'm going to tell you truthfully, where they say these tomatoes were from Italy. They might have been from Turkey.
And then packed in
olive oil, the same. Today, the controls are much stricter in Italy. It says product of Italy, or it carries what we call a DOP seal on it. These are products that are certified, guaranteed, and regulated to be authentic.
A listener asks, is it important to seek out good ingredients or to get control of the basic cooking techniques?
Well, you know, first of all, I believe that the so-called Italian-American cuisine is going to change in time because you can experience that right now with the American young chefs cooking Italian cuisine. They are buying Italian products, and they are actually changing the so-called Italian-American cuisine spectrum, in my opinion. You know, from, you know, all the top-rated Italian restaurants today in the United States are run by American chef who do Italian cuisine.
Like Michael
White's.
You know,
they're really American restaurants. You know, they're not Italian restaurants because they, in using the product, they are sort of manipulating and changing the sort of the taste and the flavors peculiar to our traditions. But I believe that the so-called Italian-American restaurant, it will change because as the operators get to know the ingredients, they're going to start using it. And by using the real ingredients, they automatically going to do and get used to a different taste of Italian cuisine. I think that will happen. Maybe it will not happen while, you know, in no, our generation.
I think it's happening
but
now.
But it will happen
it's
in
happening
time.
Now. It's happening now. I mean, I brought a sample of lentils, simple lentils, traditionally a basic peasant food, if you might say, from the ground. The difference between lentils from the town of Norcia in Umbria is drastically different than any lentils that are produced here in the U.S. or other parts of the world.
And why is that? It's the soil?
It's the clay soil that's in Norcia and the breed of type of lentil. Once, you know, I have a story about this with my own mother. When my father took ill, my mother left working in the shop for a period of years. And when she came back, it was the time when we had did the transition, authentic ingredients. Tuna from Calabria, not tuna from California, an Italian-type tuna. San Marzano tomatoes from the area of Mount Vesuvius, authentic San Marzano tomatoes. And lentils from Norcia. We called it Castelluccio. Now, they were very expensive. At the time, we were selling them for about $8 a bag. And a customer comes in, picks the lentils up, puts it on the counter. My mother looks at it and says, how much are these lentils? She had come back to work after my father had passed on. And she felt the need to come back. And she said, how much are these lentils? And I said, Ma, they're $7.99 for this package of lentils. She goes, oh, no. She tells the customer, no, don't buy these lentils. Go to the supermarket. $1.49, you get a big bag of lentils. Double. This is too much money. No, don't buy it, right? She had a habit of looking at people. If she felt you couldn't afford it, she didn't want you to spend that kind of money. So I said to my mother, Ma, they're very special, this and that. The customer knew what they were. They said, no, I'm going to take the lentils. That day, it was in a bag. I had a couple of bags that, you know, sometimes in the cases, they get crushed and they broke. And I said to my mother at the end of the day, I said, yeah, Ma, take these home because I'm not going to sell them. They were an open bag. The next day, she didn't come to work. It was a Monday. She calls me up that night, Monday night. She says, and we were talking. I said, oh, by the way, any more broken bags of those lentils? I had them today. They were very good. I said, this was someone who put...
Correct.
You know, so, it's a matter of time. And once they try it...
The more the Italian-American operator and the more the consumer gets to know Italian product, the better chance we have to change the perception of it through Italian cuisine. Because, you know, we talk about authentic Italian cuisine. You know, to recognize authenticity, you need an expert. You know, you can be an expert in art. It's for recognize an authentic painting. You can be competent in music. You recognize an authentic song. You can be competent in technology. You know, to be competent in food, in Italian cuisine, in our case, you know, you have got to be to Italy, or you must have gone to different restaurants. You must have lessons in Italian products. You got to truly understand. You know, I think we have a problem with the consumer, but above all, I think we have a consumer with the press. You know, they're the first ones who don't really know anything, and I don't think they really take the time to study in depth what Italian cuisine is, with some notable exceptions.
So you're saying that the restaurant reviewers should know more about Italian food before they talk about whether a restaurant is good or not?
Well, I have a big problem with that. You know, I find that most so-called critics today do not really understand the true flavors of Italian cuisine.
By the way, the opening text in the Silver Spoon cookbook is, eating is a serious matter.
It is. We, in Italy, is our hobby. It is our life. When we sit at the table, we talk about food. We talk about what we ate yesterday, what we're going to eat tomorrow. It's part of our culture.
So very true, Tony. And, you know, in fact, this is what I encourage my customers to do. When they come into the shop and I'm explaining to them about the lentils or about the olive oil or a specific pasta, to share it at the table with the rest of their family. Because once you know about the food that you're eating, you appreciate it so much and you start to pick up the different nuances and flavors. Italian food, the simplicity of the ingredients, it's not drowned in heavy garlic taste or heavy sauce. It's the simplicity and tasting everything that's in it, whether it's some cheese or some olive oil or a good tomato. This is what you want to bring forth.
Can I ask you some basic tips? For example, some people say you should use extra virgin olive oil for everything, and others say use it in a salad, but when you're cooking, there's no reason to use it.
It depends if you can afford it. It's all a matter of money. I mean, you know, I like to cook everything with extra virgin olive oil. In the restaurant, however, I don't do that because there are economics involved. You know, we want
to
spend
really
a lot
taste the
more
difference?
For olive oil today. We used to spend on butter.
Sometimes cooking with extra virgin olive oil can do more damage than good. It depends. It brings into the fact of technique. Extra virgin olive oil, for me, has the best flavor. But if the proportions aren't right, if the heat, the temperature isn't right, it's going to overpower the flavor, and it's going to burn very, very quickly. So that's where you get play in with olive oil, such as what we call a pure olive oil. It has a lower, a much better temperature rate where it doesn't burn as quick.
If you cook small things, okay, because you can fry in extra virgin olive oil at a lower temperature, therefore you can get a better product when it comes out to the end, because the olive oil will add and bring out the flavor of the main ingredients you're trying to cook. But you cannot do that with everything.
But also, there are
extra
virgin.
Be very careful because the temperature, you know, of other oils, they're not olive oil. They can become toxic if they are too high temperature. But the vegetable oil will never become toxic.
But it has
so it's safer.
But it does have a low tolerance to heat, olive oil. So you have to monitor it. An olive oil, such as the one I brought here from the area of Trapani, Sicily, this olive oil being so intense and so it's very difficult to cook with.
Is olive oil like wine? There are experts out there who say, I like this olive oil for this, that olive oil for that.
Because the
price range can be everything from $4.99 to $100.
No, there is people that have made a life of olive oil like they do with wine throughout Italy. But to understand olive oil, it's a lot that you can't go by just flavor alone. You need to know what it is, the polyphenols in it, which contributes to the higher antioxidants. What's the acidity level, which you do not taste acidity level. So, the lower the acidity, the better the quality, it lasts longer, and you'll get more of the vitamins and the nutrients out of it. But olive oil is going to change throughout Italy depending on the type of olive and the climate. And what makes olive oil one better than the other, you can't make that determination by tasting because it might not be to your taste. Sicilian olive oil might be too grassy and too green tomatoey. Ligurian olive would be too buttery and Tuscan oil too peppery and bitter. It doesn't mean that one is better than the other.
Now, what about pastas, Tony? Because you probably make a fair number of your own pastas. There was a time when you could get two or three in the store here, and maybe at a place like DiPaolo's you can get a couple of fresh pastas.
There's a lot of very good pasta today on the market that are made with brass stamps and they are very, very good. The artisanal kind of pasta, they're still better to cook because when you cook them, they're chewier. In other words, they're not, they don't overcook so easily, and they maintain the cooking levels a lot better than a cheap pasta.
Are any of them being made in this country? Because, there's also a movement toward local foods.
Some of the pasta today is made in this country by Italian companies that they find, that is cheaper or less expensive for the great distribution, in the large supermarkets. But we use a Settaro in my restaurant because it's still a pasta is made in an artisanal way, and there are many other pasta that are very good. But I had a long discussion with a good friend of mine who used to own a restaurant in Los Angeles, Rex, downtown Los Angeles, and Mauro Vincenti. We used to call each other at night, and the discussion is what makes the dish, the pasta or the sauce. It is a discussion that I believe will continue until I go and meet him in a number of years from now, I hope.
Are there local things? Because a number of listeners have called in about local foods and concern about flying everything in from somewhere else. Can we get a decent mozzarella that is made locally?
Well, no. That, I'd like to answer that question because for 100 years, my family has been making a fresh dairy we call mozzarella, which is technically fior di latte, which is made from cow's milk. Certainly, fresh mozzarella or fresh fior di latte means fresh, means made the same day. Unfortunately, to get it from Italy, it's going to be several days old. However, if you come into my shop, you will always find mozzarella from Italy as side by side with the fresh fior di latte that we make daily. Am I going to say mine is better? Well, mine certainly is fresher, but it's not the same. The mozzarella that we bring in from Italy is made from the milk of the water buffalo, from one particular zone, from Latina to the area of Salerno. Between that area is where you would get this wonderful product. And we do our best to get it as often as possible, to present it as fresh as possible. But fresh mozzarella, for me, means made the same day.
We have to kind of end it here, unfortunately. But I want to thank the two.
You know, I did not know that you made the fresh mozzarella until now. So I think I'm going to buy it from you, you know, particularly for cooking.
For cooking, the fior di latte is better. It's slightly denser. Yes. It's not as it doesn't break down as much.
No, I will do that because we bring a lot of bufala mozzarella from the Campania region. You know, I have my brother that is a store, it's a supermarket also in a Chelsea market called Buon Italia, and he brings a lot of stuff for me. So I don't buy as much as I would like from Lou, but when I am in trouble, I know that Lou is
maybe
there.
I've been a matchmaker here, but we got to end it, unfortunately. But you could talk afterward. My great thanks to Tony May, whose current restaurant is SD26 at 19 East 26th Street in Madison Square Park North, and Lou DiPaolo, co-owner of DiPaolo's at 200 Grand Street and Mott in Little Italy. It's been a great pleasure speaking to both of you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Enjoy it.